This is Steve Stillwell. Welcome to the Ouachita Bushcraft and Survival Show. Today's featured guest is Ray Livingston. He appeared on the History Channel on the television program Alone. Ray is a philosophical guy. He studied English and philosophy in college. He was also a police officer, and he's done search and rescue with his canine. Ray is an avid hunter, and he's taken a lot of big game animals, and that's kind of how we started our relationship. We began talking on Facebook, and we share the common interest of hunting, and we've made a lot of comments, and eventually it led to talking and him appearing on our show. Ray, welcome to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Ouachita Bushcraft and Survival Show. Today we've got Ray Livingston. Welcome to the show, Ray.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate you having me on.
Yes, sir. It is a pleasure. Pleasure to have you. First thing I'd like to talk about, I looked at your resume, and it's pretty impressive. In fact, before we began the show, I gave our audience a brief rundown of some of your skills. But I would like to talk about your canine search and rescue. That really stood out to me. Are you still doing this?
You know, I'm not active anymore. I'm an honorary member of my group. But when we moved out into northeastern Washington, I got so much time in with the farm and just maintaining the property, just the time it takes to maintain and train your dog. I just really can't dedicate that much time to it right now. But it was a very, very rewarding time in my life. I did it for about 7 years. It's a lot of work, you know, to get your dog certified, but also to maintain the certification and their skills. I mean, within our group, we train once a week and then 2 weekends a month.
Wow, that's good.
A lot of times, find areas that you can train in. It's a drive. You may have an hour or two drive to get somewhere to train for an hour and a half. So,
what kind of dog did you have, Ray?
My dog, Leroy, is a poodle pointer, which is a versatile hunting breed from Germany that originates in the 1800s.
Wow.
They're just excellent, excellent versatile hunting dogs because of their breeding. They're just great dogs to work with in whatever fashion that you want to train them in.
That's good. Sounds like an intelligent and versatile breed.
Very much so. He's trained for upland hunting, waterfowl hunting, as well as search and rescue. And even naturally, when I'm dealing with pigs around the property, he's tried his hand at a little herding work. You know, he's definitely not as good as a trained herding dog, but he jumps right in there trying to help me get the pig to where I need to be.
Yeah, that's what you need. Yeah, I've been following a lot of your posts on Facebook, and yeah, your homestead there, it looks like it's coming along really good.
I'm real happy with being up here. It was a big jump moving out of the city, and we took a leap of faith, and everything really fell into place for us up here. We have a mile driveway. We're the only one that lives off of it. And yesterday, matter of fact, I was snow plowing and my plow truck broke down. It took me all day to get her up and going, but we got it.
Ray, I want to talk about Alone and your time on there. Huh? What compelled you to audition for the program?
Oddly enough, I kind of tripped into it. I never auditioned for the show.
Really?
They found me and contacted me on Facebook somehow. And I don't even remember how I came to their attention. And they asked me if it would be something I would be interested in. I looked into the show and I was like, heck yeah. For me, I feel it was kind of a divine calling.
I agree.
I put it out to the universe about a year before then that I would really like to just spend some time in the forest where I didn't have to worry about my kids, work, anything, that I could fully immerse myself into the wilderness for a while to learn the lessons that are meant to be learned there. Really, it manifested in the form of the Alone Show, and I can't imagine any other way that it would have really touched all those bases and given me the opportunity to really fully immerse myself. And so it was just a wonderful blessing for that to come about, and it's brought additional blessings in my life.
That's good. Yeah, you were one of my favorite contestants on there. We were rooting for you. One thing I'd like to talk about, Ray, he was an English major, and you also studied philosophy, and I could see those traits, those characteristics when I watched you on TV. Let's talk about that.
I was a collegiate athlete. I was the number one rated track and field athlete in the country as I graduated high school. I qualified for our state track meet in 7 different events.
Wow.
And so, you know, the 100 meters, 200 meters, long jump, pole vault, high hurdles, I qualified in triple jump. I qualified for the state meet in all those. I ended up being a decathlete.
Oh, cool.
So in high school, my big events were the long jump and the pole vault. I was the number 2 rated pole vaulter in the country coming into high school, I think, with a jump of 16 feet 4 inches and a long jump over close to 25 feet, I think, in the long jump at high school. And then after I signed with University of Oregon, after I graduated high school, John Gillespie actually got me into my first decathlon before I actually junior championships, and I made my first U.S. track team, which was a junior track team, then in 1992. And then again in 93. And then I was All-American twice at the University of Oregon for the decathlon. And on the U.S. Visa Health South decathlon team in 1996.
So you have a competitive nature. I could see that on the show.
I was all Pac-10, I think 13 times in the decathlon, the pole vault, the long jump, and the high hurdle.
Well, let's get back to college now about English and philosophy.
So basically, I was there on a track scholarship, but I wanted to be successful in whatever I did. And I reasoned that it really doesn't matter what your degree field is. You just have to have one for most jobs nowadays, because most people don't work at them. I thought about what I'm good at, and language has always been my gift. Reading and analyzing what I'm reading and finding the meaning in it and being able to convey that was something that came fairly easy to me. And so that's why I chose. I chose not to do something that, given the nature of our practice schedule of the decathlete, which is, you know, about 4 hours a day, 6 days a week, I was working out. So I had to do that and try to be successful at school. So I chose something that I was good at, and that became English. And philosophy came in probably, I think, my junior year when I took a philosophy course as an elective, and it was a philosophy 101, but it was about critical thinking and, you know, really focused on not what to think, but how to think, how to question, how to ask why. And if I could add one thing to high school curriculum across the country, it would be a course on critical thinking, so that our young people would be able to kind of look at things objectively and think for themselves. It was really life-changing. I wished at that point that I had chosen to major in philosophy, but it was a great minor.
Yeah, I bet. You know, and that fits into your personality, you know, being in law enforcement. I'll tell you what, that takes a lot of critical thinking skills there.
It actually shaped my personality a bit. Like I said, if I hadn't taken final philosophy in college, I'd definitely be a much different person now. Because of the questions I began to ask, it led me on a different path than I probably would have been on otherwise.
Let's talk about some of your hunting, because I really enjoy some of your pictures there. Ladies and gentlemen, Ray has taken some incredible animals. Let's talk about that elk that you harvested.
I started hunting at 14 as a bow hunter, and I've always been a bow hunter until alone. I didn't want to poo-poo rifle hunting, but after alone, I found a new appreciation for having meat in the freezer. And so, you know, before, for me, hunting was more of a sport. It was me against the animals, and I still love that dynamic, you know, it's matching wits. I want fair chase. I'm not looking for
a canned hunt.
Exactly. Like, we have animals up and down our house all day. I don't hunt on my house. If I need to hunt, there's plenty of deer around. So after coming back from Malone, I actually drew a branch bull tag for rifle. I transitioned to rifle, and I bought a Smith & Wesson 460 XVR revolver. And as a transition from archery, I wanted to go into handgun hunting just because it had some of those same elements of challenge.
Yeah.
However, my goal for last season was really to put meat in the freezer. As we knew we were moving to this house, we actually closed the house before my season. My goal was to put meat in the freezer, to have it in the freezer. And so I took, as a backup, my 6.5 Grendel rifle.
All right.
I was carrying my 460 on my hip, and I had the 6.5 Grendel on my back in case the elk of a lifetime, or just my only opportunity with the elk, was one that I couldn't close the distance on to get in the handgun range. And that ended up to be what happened. It was a 650-yard shot with a 6.5 Grendel, which caliber-wise, your 6.5 Grendel is a little bit smaller than a 270, but the ballistics on that 6.5 projectile are superb. It is truly the only real 1,000-yard round out of an AR platform that will actually put stuff down. It originated with the 6.5 Swede round, which the old-timers will tell you just killed better. And so I did a lot of work with that gun for months, right when I got it, to get it sighted in, but also to do the calculations and enter the calculations in a ballistic calculator app, which was really the only reason I took that shot, is because I had done all this work mainly to clink steel at 1,000-plus yards well ahead of time, and I looked at that elk, and once I figured out the range, I actually wasn't going to take the shot. And I watched it for over an hour.
Oh, wow.
And then as it was about to go to where I would not be able to shoot it, I was like, you know what? I'm going to kick myself later. This is what I got this gun for. This is why I sighted it in. This is why I did months of work to it. I have to take a shot. And when I did, I put the first one right behind the shoulder. Like, literally, it was perfect. And so it was still on its feet, so I went up to the neck for the second one, and it dropped. I was as astounded as anybody and impressed by the rifle. But, you know, the thing about it is, this is the third time in a row, the three largest animals that I've harvested in my life came after hunting really, really hard, busting brush and climbing hills and doing all that, and getting to the point where I was wore out and I was like, you know what, I just need to relax. I just need to appreciate the place that I'm in, take time. One of the days I actually committed to not hunting. I was just going to take time and really appreciate nature and being where I'm at. Just all three times I had this just great, grand, wonderful, connected feeling with nature. And then the biggest animals of my life, all those three times, stepped out in front of me. My personal view and my connection with nature is that, you know, you take time to appreciate it and nature will provide for you. Really, if the history of humanity, if you cut it down into 24 hours, it's only the last about hour or so in that timeline that we as humans have not been able to fully take care of ourselves. This survival stuff is not something new, avant-garde. It's our birthright. And that goes for any of us. A lot of times, you know, people of color or minorities feel like they don't belong in the forest. Well, I tell you what, most ancient genetic gene pool in this world is from the Kalahari Desert. People have a supernatural connection with the world, and they still live in a daily hunter-gatherer, uber bushcrafting. They look at some of the stuff. They look at making a bow drill as being silly. Why would you spend that much energy to do something that's so simple when they can just do it real quick with a hand drill? On the hottest days of the year, and only the hottest days of the year, one of their hunting techniques is to literally chase down a kudu over the course of 5 or 6 hours, running behind it and tracking it as they run. These skills are our birthright. That's the only reason we exist, is because our ancestors and master these skills. Not something far-fetched, it's not something that's unavailable, and quite frankly, in the world today, it was comforting to know some of these, and I think it would behoove everybody to at least learn a few. Learn how to make fire. The history of fire, the history of mankind. If you learn how to make fire, that's going to go a long way of helping you survive in a survival situation.
Yeah. Are you teaching any classes right now, or do you have anything kind of in the works?
We have camping that we book on our property through Hip Camp.
Oh, and great.
On that, I offered just, you know, some basic stuff. Like, the thing that's offered on there is a fire school.
Good.
And that's kind of where I start with my skill level, you know. But for people that want to book it for the same rate, we can discuss if you want to cover some different skills, you know. So if we want to do fire, if we want to do basic foraging, shelter building, you know, any of that stuff. I try to keep it pretty basic and, you know, just to kind of get those skills in people's hands. But then I think it's important for you to grow your skills on your own. Once you get the basics, to develop the higher stuff on your own, research it, figure out as many of the different techniques as you can, and figure out what works for you. I'm more than happy to help people with the basic stuff, but like I said, I'm a jack of all trades and a master of none. Like, I'm just me doing my thing, and I know some stuff, and you know, my wife is always telling me that I am underselling my skills and ability, but, you know, I just live my life. I see what I do as just part of my normal life, nothing special, you know, and sometimes it's difficult for me to, like, think of myself as a survival expert. I still don't. I think that I will survive if I need to, and I'll figure out what I need to. But I think, you know, often too many times people get in a short-sighted mindset where they think this is the way things have to be done. Well, my mindset is the best way to do it is the way that works and get you what you need to do the fastest. In any skill, I may incorporate a little bit of this, a little bit of that. You know, part of my preparation for Rolone, after I learned and practiced some of what I felt were the most essential skills, is I just went to the University of YouTube. And I watched countless videos from all over the world on different survival subjects. Because the way my mind works is that I get in a situation where I got a paper clip, a piece of gum, and a 9-volt battery, and I need to do this. How can I make that happen, and what else can I incorporate? So I use those things as extra clubs in my golf bag. Just little things that I can pull out to help me. So I really, and several of my tasks, most of which were not shown on air, I did stuff that was the first time I've done it, but I took pieces of what I saw in one video and another video and kind of mixed them all together to accomplish a task that, having that open mind and free thinking, especially in survival, because if you get to a point where your one method of the way that you think things need to be done is not working for you, that builds frustration, and that frustration becomes the killer.
Yeah.
That becomes the thing that kind of gets you not thinking correctly, and if you can't overcome that and keep yourself in a survival mindset, which is probably the most important aspect of being in a survival situation, then we're going to be worse off.
Yeah, it's mental, and survival does take patience. I agree. Something I wanted to talk about, too, because I've watched some of the clips. Before they took you guys out and dropped you off, didn't they have kind of like a little period where you guys kind of showcased, practiced some of your skills before you were released in the field?
We did. All the seasons of Alone, what they do a few months before they deploy is they take, after they've narrowed the applicant pool to about the top 20 applicants, they bring them over generally to New York.
Yeah.
And they do an assessment camp. And that assessment camp is to, one, confirm skills, because it happens that people aren't completely honest about their skills.
Yeah.
Without the ability to be referring to YouTube or a book or something like that, they want to see that we have the basic skills for survival.
Yeah.
But also, and maybe one of the most important things, they want to see how you are in front of the camera and how comfortable you are with the camera.
Mm-hmm.
Because you could be the most skilled bushcrafter in the absolute in the world. You could be the number one of all number one bushcrafters, but if you can't work a camera and get it on a film, it's worthless.
Yeah, yeah.
In this environment.
Yeah, so, I know what you mean.
And so, you know, they want to make sure that they're putting the right people in the field, and so they do basic skills assessment and camera assessment, and to make sure that they're putting the right people and they've got the right cast. And then after that, after we go home from that, a month later is when we actually figure out whether or not we were chosen for the show.
Oh, neat.
So then we find out, and then pretty soon after that, you know, a month later, we're probably heading out in the field. And our season, we spent about 9 days on site. We didn't go to our actual survival locations. We had a spike camp that we stayed in, but we kind of got acclimated to the environment, got some basics on the what's in the area. Of course, the spike camp for the pre-launch camp is way different than our actual area.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's some stuff that's similar, and there's a lot of stuff that's not. But it just kind of gives you an idea of what's in the area and a chance to acclimate and a chance for them to do a final assessment of the participants to see us firsthand to make sure that before they deploy us in the field that we're all kind of in the right mindset.
Yeah, it's a mental challenge, no doubt.
They reserve the right to make switches at the last minute if it seems like somebody is really not going to be up to a challenge. Because let's face it, for the production company, it's all about producing a successful show. That's the trade-off. We get this opportunity for this wonderful paid camping experience where we are supported, we have safety teams, we have all this stuff, we don't have to worry about it, and we can test ourselves and our skills in the wild in a very real situation. The trade-off and what we promise them in return is to film it and try to film everything and to give them the footage that they need to make a great show. And for me, it was a great, wonderful trade-off. I enjoyed working with all the people, both the past participants, but also the production crew and the support crew. Everybody was wonderful to work with.
Mm-hmm.
I had nothing but pleasurable things and good things to say about my experience, which was one of the reasons I chose to leave when I did.
Mm-hmm.
My location just didn't have a lot of terrestrial food, and I wasn't able to figure out fishing while I was on the field.
Yeah, that's something I wanted to talk about, like the site selection. Was it kind of like a lottery system where you guys just drew straws?
Exactly. They numbered the 10 sites already, and they actually gave us rocks with the numbers painted on them, and we just drew from a hat.
So there was no favoritism or anything in that. It was just a roll of the dice. And that's good. That's fair. But yeah, you could have been in a better spot. Because when I saw where you were at, I said, man, you were kind of landlocked in a way. And that would have been very hard.
I was on an island. And because I was on an island, there really wasn't an abundance of terrestrial food. Really, the largest land animal I saw was squirrel.
Yeah.
And I'd seen some very old sign of moose and caribou, which is my assumption that they probably crossed over. That lake is frozen 9 months out of the year.
Yeah.
My guess is they passed through when it was frozen and left some droppings. But there was really, I couldn't even find, and I roamed pretty good, and I couldn't even find rabbit droppings where you see the abundance. Most of the contestants lost more animals to foxes and predators than they actually got.
Wow.
And I was sitting there, can't find a thing. And if I ran out of food at 60 days, I would have pushed it. But at 19 days and still not being able to find any signs of anything, if I found rabbits and signs of animals, and I just couldn't harvest them, and I would have been driven to figure out how to catch them. But when I'm not seeing any fresh signs of anything, even in the snow, you know, when it would snow, I would go out and just look for tracks. And so, in the end, I figured at 19 days, I really had no chance of winning with the food. The situation, and, you know, basically my best strategy would have been to sit in my shelter and wait till I starved to the point that they removed me.
Yeah.
And a lot of the past participants are still dealing with ongoing medical issues from being starved.
Yeah.
Almost to death. And so I didn't want to go through that. I wanted to have this experience remain positive. And food runs out at 60 days, I push it.
Yeah.
Food runs out at 90 days, knowing the people that are out in the field, it wasn't worth it. And so to some degree, I feel that leaving early kind of left people with a, hey, who is this guy?
We want more.
And it brought about some additional blessings and opportunities for me to be in front of the camera and to be in front of people. So, you know, I'm one of those people that believe everything happens for a reason, including the way the things went out there. You know,
yeah.
I would have loved to stay there longer, but that wasn't in the cards for me. The universe has different plans, and those plans seem to be playing out now.
That's good, Ray. In closing here, I would like you to direct people to some of your social media information.
For the most part, I post whatever I post. You know, I'm just sharing my life and my adventures with people, but you know, Ray Livingston on Facebook. I've got another page called Forest Stage Outdoors. It's me because I ran out of room for followers for friend requests on my main one, so I got the second one. And then I've got three pages that are of interest. One is Ray Livingston - Alone. The other one is Forest Stage Outdoors. It's my Facebook page and group. And the other one, and I think this is probably how the lone folks found me, is my page and group, Mountain Men Northwest.
Awesome.
And on Instagram, I am Bird_stage_509. And I just started a TikTok account, which is ForestAge509.
Thank you, Ray.
Oh,
and thank you
so
much for being on the show. Look forward to talking to you again, following your posts on Facebook.
Oh, it was a pleasure and honor. You know, I'm just me. I am honestly humbled that people find anything I got to say is relevant or interesting.
Well, Ray, I appreciate you. And
no problem. Angie's been here the whole time, so listening in. So everybody say hi to Andy.
Hello, Angie.
Hello.
She is my rock. You know, none of this is possible without her. That's one thing that people overlook in the alone.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Somebody's got to hold it down. It's a team effort here, and she's done an exceptional effort holding things down and supporting me. Like, none of this is possible without her. Thank you very much. And
yes.
Blessings to you and your family and all the staff there and all the listeners. Like, thank you guys for making me relevant at all. I really appreciated it. And like I said, I'm honored, humbled, and forever grateful.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Ray Livingston. And this is Steve signing off with the Ouachita Bushcraft and Survival Show.